mentioned just one face. The world has got a problem that concerns the human race. The world has got a problem that businessmen ignore. The world has got a problem that affects us more and more. We're burning those natural resources. I tell you that we've got to hold our horses, 'cause we're making too much carbon dioxide.
It's incredibly ancient, impossibly small, and we're all full of it. It's carbon.
Carbon. Our bones and bodies would not exist without it. Nor would plants or microbes, or the incredible carbon chemistry that links us all together. Carbon is the stuff of life on Earth. And it is old. Carbon was forged in the nuclear furnaces of long-dead stars before our solar system was even a wink in the celestial eye. This means every atom now on Earth has been on a restless adventure since the dawn of time. And that as far as carbon is concerned, every life form on the planet, us included, is 100% recycled and recyclable. We like to think we're living in a bold new age of silicon, but the stuff that powers us is oil. Ancient, mysterious, and messy. There are now 6.5 billion of us on the planet, pretty much all relying on oil in some way every day.
There are hundreds of different hydrocarbon molecules of different shapes and sizes in a single sample of oil. So the first task of a refinery is to sort them out. So the first big thing was to modify it for automotive gasoline and even more demanding aviation gasoline. Then diesel fuel came along, then jet fuel. Then the refiners started to develop ways of taking the bigger molecules and cracking them in half, or taking the smaller molecules and gluing them together.
And in this way, the modern petrochemical industry was born. About 10% of all oil is now converted into pretty much everything, from plastics to paints, from pesticides to painkillers.
We are intruding into the basic chemistry of the planet. Since World War II, we've invented something like 70,000 synthetic chemicals in our laboratories. They didn't exist in those forms prior to this period. And in just 50 years, we are manufacturing by the hundreds of millions of tons and putting those chemicals out into the atmosphere, the water system, the life system, the land system, and the whole Earth is trying to deal with elements it's never had to deal with before, at a level it's never dealt with before.
In 50 years or so, the Earth, we know, will rearrange its climate patterns. Those of us who live that long will find it unpredictable, mysterious, and strange. Climate change. There will be drought about the coastal plains, and we will see the flooding rains infrequently, but when they come, they'll recreate the famous and historic inland sea. Could be. A shift of 3 degrees, an inch or two of rising seas is all we need for vicious storms like we've never seen before to have a deleterious effect. Lives wrecked.
Right from the beginning, the oil story has always been full of big numbers, but never more so than now.
Imagine for a moment a gigantic building full of oil. It's enormous, a kilometre on each side. Now look up. It towers a staggering 4.5 kilometres into the air. It's a tank of oil that would dwarf any city in the world.
This is the volume of oil we burned in a single year, in 2004. 4.5 cubic kilometres of the stuff. Each year we guzzle another building like this, and each one climbs another 10 stories higher.
He loves to go shopping in his SUV. A car that large is rocking, yeah, fits him to a T. When he gets behind the wheel, feels that engine wind. He doesn't think of the gasoline and he's burning all of the time. Will it be now or later when he gets a clue? Global warming is coming, baby, it's gonna get you.
No one knows for sure when humans first encountered oil, though it was certainly at least 3,000 years ago. And probably here, in the lands of the ancient Persian Empire, where the chemical remains of fossilized sunlight still wind their way to the surface.
Of course, it's not only oil that can escape from the ground. This is Yanar Dağ, or Burning Mountain, in Azerbaijan. And the natural methane seeping from the earth here caught fire over 50 years ago, and it's been burning ever since.
Today we see such a display as evidence of a possible oil deposit nearby. In the days of the Persian Empire, it was a sign of the gods. The Zoroastrian religion, like its eternal flames, survives to this day. Fire temples were built around natural vents like this one near Baku. Worshippers heard the hisses of the natural gas as the talk of spirits, and saw the constant flames as the divine manifestation of truth. It seems wherever oil was encountered, people found a use for it.
It had a value as pitch. They would heat it, melt it, and then coat their boats with it.
They would throw it into water and see what kind of, whatever shape it took would tell them something about the future.
The Chinese had a complete industry long before Christ. They had pipelines made out of bamboo, and they had junks that carried oil.
The Greeks would mix it with sulfur and put it in a clay pot, light it on fire, and it's essentially a bomb, an oil bomb.
They'd dump it overboard and set fire to it and burn the enemy ships.
In the Middle Ages, they discovered that they could use oil to make flamethrowers out of it.
By the 1800s, one enterprising American was even flogging it off to drink as the ultimate cure-all tonic. But in the end, it was a shortage of sperm whales that finally kick-started the oil age. With the price of whale oil skyrocketing, the discovery of how to distill kerosene from crude created the first global demand for lighting.
Polar ice is melting, springs in June, the future's black, the seasons will be out of whack, the crops will die, the earth will dry, Macquarie Street will be Macquarie Creek. Looks bleak.
We were seduced by convenience and power. As an energy source, oil has no equal. Like wood and coal, it would burn in air. But as a liquid, it's easy to transport. And the power of ancient sunlight stored in the strong bonds between carbon and hydrogen atoms can release 100 times more energy than it costs to get it out of the ground.
The thing about oil is it has incredible energy density. You know the old question which the schoolmaster puts to the class, what will fill a teacup and lift a ton 1,000 meters into the air? And the class looked vacant. And of course it's petroleum. You can put that much in a car and you can drive up 1,000 meter hill and you get there. It's an astonishing amount of energy in a small volume.
Well, the glaciers are all melting and the Arctic's turning green. Polar bears have seen their lairs go floating downstream. Harp seals have changed color, they're no longer white. They're now bronze, conflicted and extremely uptight. Will it be now or later when he gets a clue? Global warming is coming, baby, it's gonna get you.
Now, what I'm talking about is this strange material called methane clathrate. And it looks like ice. It looks like dry ice, actually. It's actually comprised of methane and water, and it's frozen in seafloor sediments and up in permafrost as well. Chemically, it looks like this, methane with water molecules around it. If you light this on fire, it actually burns. Now, it's like a freak. It's just stabilized at great depths in the ocean and by 0 degree water at the bottom of the ocean and in permafrost areas. It just happened to be frozen that way.
Ho, ho, ho! It was a very warm year.
Wanna tell you about the greenhouse effect and a little ozone hole that started out over Antarctica but has now spread to the North Pole. You will soon see every warm weatherman at the Jersey Shore in March. Long as you use a sunscreen while you tan, your skin will never part. But what will Santa do?
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
When the North Pole starts to melt, what is gonna happen to his little elves? Will they be too busy swimming to make the toy?
But what the most concerning part about this is that methane has 23 to 62 times the efficiency of CO2 in terms of warming. That is, for every molecule of methane, it's going to warm 60 times more than CO2. So if you imagine there's twice as much methane and it's 20 to 60 times more efficient, that's concerning. But it's more concerning when you consider it's unstable, it's ice. It melts with 2 degrees of temperature change. It's melted in the past and totally changed the climate and caused extinction events. And we are looking at temperature changes about on that order. The question is this a mechanism that is going to become one of those feedbacks or tipping points in our near future? Because if it is, our climate will abruptly change to a completely uninhabitable greenhouse world for us, and it will do it very, very quickly. And it does it by this. We warm some parts of the ocean. That methane is melted. It's released to the atmosphere. That methane acts to warm the atmosphere. That methane acts to warm the atmosphere. More methane is melted. That methane then goes into the atmosphere and contributes to the warming and melts more methane further at higher latitudes. What we're describing is a positive feedback in which all of the methane zippers open and melts catastrophically across the planet. Now, has this happened in the past? Is it an entire hypothetical? Well, the work we do in my lab is to go back into ancient events and identify causes of the abrupt climate change. What we're doing here in South Australia is we're looking at one of these events in which the coldest period in Earth history transitioned to one of the warmest periods in Earth history over a very short amount of time. We're thinking thousands of years. This period of climate change we have to go back almost 600 million years to see, but it looks almost identical in rates of change as our present condition. And the driver for this is almost certainly methane clathrate melting. This is a case where we can confirm this mechanism had a catastrophic effect.
What will Santa do if the North Pole melts too fast? Is this Christmas gonna be his last? What will parents have to tell their girls and boys?
If you had to be scared of one thing, there's actually lots of things to be scared of. But if you ask me what's the one thing I worry about the most in the near term, it's the permafrost melting. The permafrost is, as it says, it's frozen ground around the Arctic that contains organic material. It's old plants, maybe a dinosaur here or there, or something like that. But it's mostly like frozen peat moss, if you think of it like that. And it's frozen, so it hasn't decomposed into CO2 and methane. It contains twice as much CO2 as the entire atmosphere holds. And it is melting now. We really don't know how fast it's melting. We don't know how much CO2 it's giving off. We know it's happening. There's some estimates. It's a lot already. The humans give off about 30 billion tons of CO2 a year, excess CO2. And since methane is 20 times more powerful than CO2 as a heat-trapping gas, it's estimated that the amount given off in the last couple of years might be equivalent to about 1 billion tons of CO2. What's happening in this picture is this is a lake in Siberia. It's a lake formed because of melting permafrost. It's now water underneath. Someone poked a hole in the ice and lit a match.
And what will Santa do if the North Pole melts too fast? Is this Christmas gonna be his last? What will parents have to tell their girls and boys? The Australian Labor Party wants to see the economy grow.
So their platform says that we will tow Santa from the equator to the South Pole.
If the Russians will get him through the Bering Strait,
the Kurds can do the rest.
But the Conservatives would rather that we make him wait and put him to the market test.
But what will Santa do?
Ho, 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 ho.
When the North Pole starts to melt,
what is gonna happen to his little elves? Will they be too busy swimming to make the toys?
And what will Santa do if the North Pole melts too fast?
Is this Christmas gonna be his last? What will parents have to tell their girls and boys?
You're not supposed to see a stream of fire coming out of a frozen lake. That's because there's methane trapped under there. And they poked a hole and released it and lit a match. It's like lighting a gas stove. And that is happening all over the Arctic now. I just saw an article on this 2 days ago, where they just took a little patch of the Arctic Sea and did sonar and could see methane plumes coming out of the bottom of the sea. Actually, that's coming from something else, which we'll get to in a moment. So the oceans have been absorbing a lot of the CO2 that we put into the atmosphere. As you've heard, they're getting more acidic. As they get more acidic, shells can't grow, and that's sort of the plankton and these kind of things that have hard shells and little shrimp, and it's going to reach a point where they can't grow at all. That's sort of the bottom of the food chain. Remember, we're at the top of the food chain. So when the bottom of the food chain goes, everything above it is in a lot of trouble. And also, as the ocean warms, it also can absorb less CO2. And also, as it gets more CO2 in it, it also absorbs less CO2. So it's already absorbing less of the CO2 we're putting out than it used to. And it could get to the point where it gets so bad, it actually starts giving off CO2. If that ever happens, that's game over. This is not one of the scientists at UC Berkeley that studies this. So this is not like the nearest term thing to worry about. This is a longer term thing to worry about. But certainly just the fact it's absorbing less CO2 is a problem, because that means when we cut back our CO2, which we have to do, we have to cut it back more than we think, because the ocean isn't helping us as much as it used to. So this is the one I wanted to get to about what the bubbling. There's another source of methane. It's stored. There is a tremendous amount of stored methane frozen in ice under the ocean, under high pressure in cold temperatures. That looks like a burning snowball. But that's a methane class rate. And if that ever goes, there's so much of that, that would release incredible amounts of methane into the atmosphere, and we would be gone pretty soon. Fortunately, most of it's pretty deep, where it's still pretty cold, and the warming that's existed happening so far is happening more at the surface, so this has not been disturbed. The one place that's an exception is in the Arctic Sea, where it was covered in ice all the time, and now it's not, and so it's warming up fairly rapidly up there, and that's where they've been measuring this methane coming out a lot, but most of it gets absorbed by the ocean before it reaches the surface and doesn't get into the atmosphere. But it also makes the ocean more acidic, too, at the same time. So this one is something to worry about, but not as near-term problem as the permafrost, although we're learning more about this all the time.
You may not believe my story because the ending's not very nice. You may not believe in Santa Claus. You may not believe in Christ. But if you don't believe this warning about the climate and the ozone hole, look under your tree one Christmas morning, or you'll see our lumps of coal. And that's what Santa will do when the North Pole starts to melt. What is gonna happen to his little elves? Will they be too busy?
Little Mary's house is underwater. I can't go down the chimney, I'll drown.
And what will Santa do if the North Pole melts too fast? Is this Christmas gonna be his last? What will parents have to tell their girls and boys?
Study: Arctic seabed methane stores destabilizing, venting.
An article from www.fisorg.com. Powered by Audiodizer.
A section of the Arctic Ocean sea floor that holds vast stores of frozen methane is showing signs of instability and widespread venting of the powerful greenhouse gas, according to the findings of an international research team led by University of Alaska Fairbanks scientists Natalia Shakova and Igor Semolitov. The research results, published in the March 5th edition of the journal Science, show that the permafrost under the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, long thought to be an impermeable barrier sealing in methane, is perforated and is leaking large amounts of methane into the atmosphere. Release of even a fraction of the methane stored in the shelf could trigger abrupt climate warming. The amount of methane currently coming out of the East Siberian Arctic Shelf is comparable to the amount coming out of the entire world's oceans, said Shakova, a researcher at UAFS International Arctic Research Center. Subsea permafrost is losing its ability to be an impermeable cap. Methane is a greenhouse gas more than 30 times more potent than carbon dioxide. It is released from previously frozen soils in two ways. When the organic material which contains carbon stored in permafrost thaws, it begins to decompose and, under oxygen-free conditions, gradually release methane. Methane can also be stored in the seabed as methane gas or methane hydrates and then released as subsea permafrost thaws. These releases can be larger and more abrupt than those that result from decomposition. The East Siberian Arctic Shelf is a methane-rich area that encompasses more than 2 million square kilometers of seafloor in the Arctic Ocean. It is more than three times as large as the nearby Siberian wetlands, which have been considered the primary northern hemisphere source of atmospheric methane. Shakova's research results show that the East Siberian Arctic Shelf is already a significant methane source, 7 teragrams yearly, which is equal to the amount of methane emitted from the rest of the ocean. A teragram is equal to about 1.1 million tons. Our concern is that the subsea permafrost has been showing signs of destabilization already, she said. If it further destabilizes, the methane emissions may not be teragrams, it would be significantly larger. Shakova notes that Earth's geological record indicates that atmospheric methane concentrations have varied between about 3 to 4 parts per million during cold periods to 6 to 7 parts per million during warm periods. Current average methane concentrations in the Arctic average about 1.85 parts per million, the highest in 400,000 years, she said. concentrations above the East Siberian Arctic Shelf are even higher. The East Siberian Arctic Shelf is a relative frontier in methane studies. The shelf is shallow, 50 meters or less in depth, which means it has been alternately submerged or terrestrial, depending on sea levels throughout Earth's history. During Earth's coldest periods, it is a frozen Arctic coastal plain, and does not release methane. As the planet warms and sea levels rise, it is inundated with seawater, which is 12-15 degrees warmer than the average air temperature. It was thought that seawater kept the East Siberian Arctic Shelf permafrost frozen, Shakova said. Nobody considered this huge area. Earlier studies in Siberia focused on methane escaping from thawing terrestrial permafrost. Simulatov's work during the 1990s showed, among other things, that the amount of methane being emitted from terrestrial sources decreased at higher latitudes. But those studies stopped at the coast. Starting in the fall of 2003, Shakova, Simulatov and the rest of their team took the studies offshore. From 2003 through 2008, they took annual research cruises throughout the shelf and sampled seawater at various depths and the air 10 meters above the ocean. In September 2006, they flew a helicopter over the same area, taking air samples at up to 2,000 meters in the atmosphere. In April 2007, they conducted a winter expedition on the sea ice. They found that more than 80% of the deep water and greater than half of surface water had methane levels more than 8 times that of normal seawater. In some areas, the saturation levels reached at least 250 times that of background levels in the summer and 1,400 times higher in the winter. They found corresponding results in the air directly above the ocean's surface. Methane levels were elevated overall and the seascape was dotted with more than 100 hotspots. This, combined with winter expedition results that found methane gas trapped under and in the sea ice, showed the team that the methane was not only being dissolved in the water, it was bubbling out into the atmosphere. These findings were further confirmed when Shakova and her colleagues sampled methane levels at higher elevations. Methane levels throughout the Arctic are usually 8 to 10% higher than the global baseline. When they flew over the shelf, they found methane at levels another 5 to 10% higher than the already elevated Arctic levels. The East Siberian Arctic Shelf, in addition to holding large stores of frozen methane, is more of a concern because it is so shallow. In deep water, methane gas oxidizes into carbon dioxide before it reaches the surface. In the shallows of the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, methane simply doesn't have enough time to oxidize, which means more of it escapes into the atmosphere. That, combined with the sheer amount of methane in the region, could add a previously uncalculated variable to climate models. The release to the atmosphere of only 1% of the methane assumed to be stored in shallow hydrate deposits might alter the current atmospheric burden of methane up to 3 to 4 times, Shakova said. The climatic consequences of this are hard to predict. Shakova, Simulatov and collaborators from 12 institutions in 5 countries plan to continue their studies in the region, tracking the source of the methane emissions and drilling into the seafloor in an effort to estimate how much methane is stored there.
But if you don't believe this warning about the climate and the ozone hole, look under your tree one Christmas morning, or you'll see our lumps of coal. And that's what Santa will do. Starts to melt. What is gonna happen to his little elves? Will they be too busy?
Little Mary's house is underwater. I can't go down the chimney, I'll drown.
And what will Santa do if the North Pole melts too fast?
Merry
is this Christmas gonna be his last? What will parents have to tell their girls and boys?